from UALR Public Radio and the Argenta Arts Foundation. This is a Tales from the South Tin Roof Project.
Believe it or not, I've always been a bit spooked in the dark. It's a trait that complicates my outdoor ventures. It's exhausting for someone who hunts as much as I do. Spending so much time in the dark woods to always be on edge.
Recorded in front of a live audience at Starving Artist Cafe in the Argenta Arts District of North Little Rock, Arkansas.
It started with the unmistakable gravel-popping sounds of a vehicle approaching the camp. In my dream, it wakes me from a dead sleep.
This week, it's an intimate dinner with a notable Southerner on our unrehearsed show, telling their story as if they were sitting on the porch with you.
The middle of the swamp was the last place I wanted to be in the middle of the night under any circumstances, much less with a gang of bloodthirsty rednecks hell-bent on killing me and my daughter.
So sit back, relax, and reconnect with the power of a story.
We were forced to flee into the vast swamp down a seldom-used trail that I hoped would lead to an old railroad bed called the Dummy Line.
Now, let's go live to Tales from the South.
Well, I never was good at cutting down trees. I couldn't stand the sound when they went to their knees. I had to give it all up. It just wasn't me. Now I let those trees grow tall. It takes a little longer, but I got the time. Feeling growing stronger like the old growth pine. You can go on out and try it sometime. You can learn how to talk to the trees. That's why I'm a tree lover. I'm a tree hugger. I'm a son of a birch. I got a redwood mother. I'm a friend of the trees. Some of my best friends are trees. I like them stately and I like them tall. Green in the summer and red in the fall. We couldn't live without them at all. That's why we all should love trees. Well, there's aspen and cedar and willow and pine. I never met a tree that I didn't like. They keep it cool and shady when I'm out on a hike. That's just one of the glories of trees. Home of the robin and the red cockaded. Cedar waxwing and the great pileated. Well, the air we breathe, you know it's tree generated. That's why the chickadee sings. That's why I'm a tree hugger, I'm a tree lover, I'm a son of a birch, I got a redwood mother, I'm a friend of the trees, some of my best friends are trees. Well, I like them stately and I like them tall, green in the summer and red in the fall, we couldn't live without them at all, and that's why we all should love trees. You know, the Ozark Forest is an ancient place, vital importance to the human race. If we don't save it now, it could be too late. We'll never put it back again. So we should all work together for the sake of the trees. Part of Mother Earth's living legacy. What will the next generation see if we don't take care of the trees? That's why I'm a tree lover, I'm a tree hugger, I'm a son of a birch, I got a redwood mother, I'm a friend of the trees. Some of my best friends are trees. I like them stately and I like them tall. Green in the summer and red in the fall. We couldn't live without them at all. That's why we all should love trees. No, we couldn't live without them at all. That's why we all should love trees.
How's everybody doing tonight? So how about tonight's music by Staymore? Did y'all enjoy? You can find out more about Staymore on Facebook. All right, well, welcome to Starving Artist Cafe in the Argenta Arts District of North Little Rock, Arkansas, and to a very special edition of Tales from the South, a monthly series we call the Tin Roof Project, where well-known Southerners bring their own true stories to life. Tales from the South is presented by the Argenta Arts Foundation and Temenos Publishing Company, and tonight's show is sponsored by William F. Lehman Public Library, all right here in North Little Rock. And I'm your host, Paula Moreau. On my left here, strumming his 1931 National Resonator, is blues guitarist Mark Simpson. Mark wrote our theme music and plays for us live each week. And how about our set back here? What do y'all think about our set? These genuine screen doors from the Arkansas Delta with mixed media portraiture are by esteemed Arkansas artist V.L. Cox from her Images of the American South collection. A portion of the proceeds from the sale of these works goes to Tales from the South. More can be seen at her website, greatfineart.com. All right, are y'all ready for some Southern-style storytelling? Bobby Cole, a Montgomery, Alabama native, is president of Mossy Oak Biologic, one of America's top hunting suppliers and a leading brand in wildlife management products. Mossy Oak started out as a camouflage company over 20 years ago and quickly became the industry standard. The company has now grown to embody an outdoor lifestyle, including apparel, nearly 1,000 licenses, biologic wild game seed products, Mossy Oak gamekeepers, Mossy Oak properties, and native nurseries. Along with being an avid wildlife manager, hunter, and supporter of the Catch a Dream Foundation, Bobby is also the editorial director of Gamekeeper magazine, and his acclaimed first novel, The Dummy Line, is a white-knuckle ride into the shadowy woods of Alabama, where the depths of evil and the peaks of courage are the only landmarks. Bobby lives with his wife and daughter in West Point, Mississippi. Tonight, Bobby takes us to his hunting camp deep in the woods of South Alabama as the sun sets and the fears come alive in The Nightmare. Ladies and gentlemen, Bobby Cole.
Believe it or not, I've always been a bit spooked in the dark. It's a trait that complicates my outdoor ventures. It's exhausting for someone who hunts as much as I do, spending so much time in the dark woods, to always be on edge. Simply walking to a deer stand in the morning darkness or out of the woods after sundown has been an adventure of its own accord. Sitting alone in a pitch black swamp waiting for a turkey to wake up or ducks to fly causes all my senses to work overtime. The creepy sounds of the night woods causes me to question everything. I have no doubt the legend of Bigfoot was born at night when an imaginative Indian heard something he couldn't identify and it scared him to death. We've all heard noises and we've all whispered, "What was that?" or "Did you hear that?" As a boy, I had a recurring nightmare. I'm alone, slipping quietly through the pre-dawn to a tree stand in pursuit of a giant white-tailed buck. The woods are silent except for the constant steps of something following me. For every two steps I take, it takes two matching steps. A quick sweep with a flashlight doesn't expose anything. I continue deeper into the woods until finally I step on something that causes me to stop. Immediately I click on a flashlight to see the mutilated body of a hunting buddy laying at my feet. The same instant, a loud, long shriek erupts from whatever is stalking me, and I bolt upright. The nightmare's over, but the memory never ends. I vowed never to tell anyone. I've held it inside, and I tiptoe through the dark with my emotions as tight as two coats of paint. Had I told, my mother would have hauled me off to therapy, and my hunting buddies, well, I just couldn't think of a way to tell them. That takes us to a fateful night in April a few years back. I managed to talk my wife into allowing our 8-year-old daughter to join me on an overnight turkey hunting trip. My hunting club is in an extremely remote area in southwest Alabama, remote being the key word. To get my wife's blessing for Jesse to go on this hunt, I had to swear on everything holy that I would take care of her and the consequences of anything, no matter how trivial, happening to her were, well, let's just say, I'm glad I have at least one child. y'all will get that later when you're riding home. My wife had seen the camp. It's in the middle of a huge swamp. And knew that none of it, including the surrounding area leading for miles into the camp, was no place for a child, particularly our tiny sweet girl. The camp was rustic, shall we say, and the swamp was beautiful, yet potentially terrifying. That night, Jesse and I built a fire, we roasted marshmallows, and at her request, I even told a few ghost stories. It was good quality time together, only we weren't supposed to be alone. A friend from work was supposed to be there, and he wasn't. His unexplained absence was somewhat concerning. Finally, it was time for bed. The 4:30 alarm would come soon, and we both were looking forward to the early hunt. We had hunted together several times, but spring was special for me. I really wanted to share with Jessie something I dearly cherish, and I had high hopes that she would come to love turkey hunting too. The night air was cool, but inside the camper, the little electric heater had everything warm. Above me in a small fold-down bed, Jessie was buried inside a neon green sleeping bag, cuddling a raggedy beanie baby. I lay awake for several hours wondering and worrying about my friend. It wasn't like him to miss a hunt, and I cussed the cellular telephone company for not having a tower in the area. As I finally drifted off to sleep with my wife's words of worry swirling through my mind, concern about my missing buddy and my desire to make this hunt special for Jessie, the new nightmare began. According to scientists, we typically spend more than 2 hours a night dreaming, but they don't know how or why we dream or how long they last. Most folks think that each dream only lasts a few minutes or even seconds, but I can tell you, this nightmare sure seemed to last a lot longer. It started with the unmistakable gravel-popping sounds of a vehicle approaching the camp. In my dream, it wakes me from a dead sleep. I climbed from my bunk and stepped into my boots. I can see the headlights moving through the woods, coming closer. At first, I figured it was my friend finally arriving, but that notion was obliterated when I heard several strange voices discussing the unlocked gate and if they should continue with their plans. To make a long story shorter, it was a gang of rednecks who had come to rob the camp, and when I surprised them, they got extremely excited, and I knew I had to take care of my little girl at all costs. Tensions mounted, lines were crossed, and I had to kill one of the gang members to protect my daughter. The rednecks blocked the only escape route I knew, and we were forced to flee into the vast swamp down a seldom-used trail that I hoped would lead to an old railroad bed called the Dummy Line. If I could reach it, it would ultimately lead us to safety. The middle of the swamp was the last place I wanted to be in the middle of the night under any circumstances, much less with a gang of bloodthirsty rednecks hell-bent on killing me and my daughter. We bounced down the old logging road at breakneck speed. One of the gang's truck lights were in my rearview mirror, and that's when I finally woke up, sweating, awake from my dream. I was completely drenched and breathing heavy. The only sound was the buzzing of the electric space heater. I jumped up to check on Jessie. She was sleeping soundly, but still buried in her sleeping bag. My watch glowed 12:30 a.m. I'd only been asleep for an hour, I guess. But now sleep wasn't possible. I grabbed a cold Coca-Cola and opened the camper door for some fresh air and sat in the doorway. As I considered how realistic the dream was, I grasped just how easy it would be for someone to drive up and rob us, or any hunting and fishing camp for that matter that I've ever been to. My shotgun was in my truck along with thousands of dollars worth of gear that could easily be pawned. How many of us go to hunting and fishing camps and never lock the doors? Security is rarely considered. I've been to dozens of camps, and I knew that my nightmare could really happen. Suddenly, I heard the sound of gravel popping and saw headlights shining through the trees. I jumped up and bolted for the truck to get my gun. Someone was really coming toward the camp. It was deja vu. My nightmare was real. With shaking hands, I silently loaded my weapon. I swallowed hard as I slipped into the shadows beside the camper to wait. The vehicle stayed at the gate. I couldn't hear the engine. I couldn't hear doors closing or any voices. Finally, the headlights went dark. What in the world was going on, I thought. Were they sneaking into the camp? After what seemed like an eternity, I summoned all my courage and stalking skills and crept toward the gate. I got close enough to see the vehicle, which was a dark-colored Jeep Cherokee. The moonlight silhouetted the two people inside. My heart pumped harder. I strained to see and hear what was going on. I gripped the shotgun tightly, ready for anything. As I inched closer, the windows were foggy, and that's when it hit me. They weren't there to harm me. They were parking. A couple of teenagers parking were the source of my terror. Relief flooded me. I stood and smiled. The love-struck youngsters had no idea that an adrenaline-overloaded dad stood less than 10 yards from them with a loaded shotgun. I hurriedly slipped back to camp. I couldn't quit thinking that my new nightmare could actually happen. I didn't sleep the rest of the night. When the alarm clock went off, Jesse woke with enthusiasm and didn't seem to notice that I looked like a zombie. That afternoon, safely back at home, and with a story flowing through my mind, I began a new adventure on my laptop by simply typing the dummy line, chapter one.
Thank you so much, Bobby Cole, for being on our 10 Roof Project for Tales from the South. Welcome, Bobby Cole, to Tales from the South. So your daughter, Jessie, was 8 years old when you took her on this overnight hunting trip with you. How long afterward did you finally tell her this story, both of the nightmare and about coming up on the parking kids?
You know, actually, I don't think I've ever told her the whole story.
So. Unless she listens to NPR, right? And so what about your wife, who was very weary about you taking her? How much time passed before you told her this story?
You know, I actually told her that night when I got back home. I told her the story. So she knew, but with a daughter, and especially she's a little older now, it's kind of hard to talk about teenagers and parking and all
right,
that.
Yeah.
I don't really want to bring that up.
Did Jessie come to love turkey hunting like you so wanted her to after this trip?
You know she did. And it's because it's an early morning activity. But she loves to go in the afternoon, but turkey hunting is an early morning activity, and she hadn't caught on to that.
I see. Okay. You say that in your story that security is rarely considered at hunting and fishing camps, which we all know. And so after this, did you end up adding security measures to your own hunting camp?
Well, we definitely locked the doors now and locked the trucks, and I've really had a number of guys tell me that their wives won't go to their camps with them anymore after reading the story, or that they have insisted that they have a security system. And you know, Kyle's wife has even said that the book single-handedly keeps women and children from going to hunting camps now, and that really was not my intention at all with the story.
Are you sure? No. You got back home from this trip and the nightmare and the incident that happened, and you immediately started writing what became your book, The Dummy Line. And we have a surprise for everybody tonight. Bobby has brought a book for everyone in our audience tonight.
I think it's important to note that it's not so scary that everybody quits going to the hunting camp, though.
That's what I said, intentional? Your book is the nightmare that you had that night, more or less. Can you tell us about this process of writing the book and how much you drew from your own personal hunting experiences and surroundings in South Alabama?
Well, I get asked that question a lot. The nightmare that I had and just kind of described to you guys is chapter 6 in the story. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I experienced. That's what I literally experienced. And when I just, you know, soon afterwards, it was just in my mind. I couldn't get it out of my mind. And I literally went home that night and got out a laptop. And for people that know me, I don't know how to operate laptops very well at all. And I lost the story so many times, but that's another thing. But it was in my head, and I really, really wanted to tell this story. Mm-hmm. And I literally, you know, just started with chapter one. But the funnest part for me, the absolute funnest part, was each night kind of stepping into the shoes of a different character, you know, creating several characters in the backstory and then getting to the point where chapter 6 occurs. But then every night listening, and people think I'm crazy, but it's like the characters would speak to me. Mm-hmm. And I could literally have, you know, conversations in my head, and they would tell me what they would do in this situation or why they would do this. And that was just so much fun listening to them and telling the story. So it really wasn't my story. It was their story. And I just told it.
Yeah, you know, some people call that crazy, but we call it writing, so.
But I never knew that until this whole process And several people have told me that happens to others. Sure. But I never knew that. And I really, for the longest time, I never told anybody that because I thought they would think I was crazy.
All right. Well, we have a few minutes here at the end. If you have a question for Bobby about anything at all, about Mossy Oak or about his story or anything you would like to ask him.
Hi, Bobby. I just want to know if you still have the same dream now after you've written the book.
No, I have not. It's funny. The dream that I was referring to, I had that when I was like a teenager. And it happened a bunch, but I hadn't had it in a long time. And, you know, since I had the dream of the dummy line, I've been trying to I go back and think, what did I eat that night? I've been trying to have another dream because that made it so easy to kickstart a story, and I need another dream to happen, I suppose.
Maybe tonight, right? Starving Artist Cafe.
Hi, Bobby. My name's Susan. How old is your daughter now, and has she read your book?
Well, she's 17. And she reads all the time. She reads a book a week. And she claims she's read it. But I've never actually seen her reading it. But some of my fondest memories were when she was really little. I would be sitting on the couch typing, and my wife would come in and sit down, and Jesse would come sit next to me, and they would kind of read over my shoulder. And she gave a lot of advice. You know, an 8-year-old giving you advice, you just kind of have to take it with a grain of salt sometimes. But she read a bunch of it. But to answer your question, I don't know if she sat down and read the whole book or not. Can't get the true story out of her.
I'm curious how did you hook up with Mossy Oak and the Hayes family, and then what part of South Alabama are you from?
Well, I'm from Montgomery.
Okay.
And I met Toxie through, Toxie Hayes owns Mossy Oak. And I met him through another gentleman that I knew named John Collett that lives in Montgomery. He had a store called Collett's Outdoorsman. And Collett's Outdoorsman sold a bunch of Mossy Oak, and there was a turkey calling contest, and Toxie was there, and we got introduced and just, you know, really struck up a friendship. And a year or so later, I moved to West Point. Yes, yeah, Clay County, Mississippi. It's a really, really neat place.
So where was your friend that night?
I suppose I can tell. He was 45 years old, and he had never he was 45 years old before he got married, and he had just gotten married about I don't know a year earlier, and so the story goes he got a better offer that night. And he never called to let me know. I mean, I think that's what set the whole dream in motion. I was worried about, where is he? But I've yet to forgive him for that. Well, this has been a lot of fun. I really appreciate y'all letting me come.
All right, so how about our story and storyteller tonight? What y'all think? Thank you so much, Bobby Cole, for being on our Tin Roof Project for Tales from the South. Thank you to our live audience, and thank you to UALR Public Radio. Tales from the South is presented by the Argenta Arts Foundation and Temenos Publishing Company, and our official media sponsor is AY Magazine, Arkansas's leading lifestyle publication at aymag.com. Tonight's show is sponsored by William F. Lehman Public Library. Additional support provided by the North Little Rock Visitors Bureau and the Oxford American, the Southern Magazine of Good Writing. You can download and listen to our podcast on our website, talesfromthesouth.com. Have a great night, and we'll see you next week at Starving Artist Cafe in the Argenta Arts District of North Little Rock, Arkansas, and for another edition of Tales from the South. Good night, everybody. All right, are y'all ready for some Southern-style storytelling?
Nearby, we found a charming little authentic pub called The Celt, a neighborhood gathering place with great beer and tasty food.
There's nothing quite like hearing a great story brought to life by the person who lived it, something that makes you laugh or cry, takes you back 20 years, or surfaces a memory you haven't even thought of since you were a kid.
Now, I called Mark my little brother, but we were exactly the same size, and I was only 2 years older. Mark and I had fought bitterly growing up.
I really don't remember much about the 1984 World's Fair in New Orleans, except for the enormous topless mermaid.
Our personal narratives hold our past, reflect our present, and can shape our future.
Put it on the carport! Stop that paper man!
We connect and reconnect with each other through the power of a story.
The distinct art of Southern storytelling is a wonderful tradition here in the South, whether sitting on the porch or sitting around the dinner table together.
Yippee-ki-yo, yippee-ki-yay, I'm a wild Indian from Cherokee County.
Hi, my name is Paula Morrell, and I'm a writer and the creator and producer of Tales from the South radio show that we record in front of a live audience every Tuesday night at Starving Artist Cafe in the Argenta Arts District of North Little Rock, Arkansas.
Despite the discomfort his presence caused me, the broken man and his wife sat beside me, she slowly grazing through a six-month-old fashion magazine, and he staring blankly through the plate glass windows at the opposite end of the waiting area.
Walking along the platform of the metro station, I was unaware of the musty smell of underground places. I had forgotten about the group of people I had been walking with, and might have even forgotten that I was in a foreign country.
Our show is a cross between a house concert and a literary reading, with everyday Southerners reading their own true stories in front of a live audience over dinner. Each night, we also have local musicians come and play blues, folk, bluegrass, roots country, Americana, all in the storytelling tradition. Our Tin Roof Project is a once-a-month series where we have well-known Southerners bring their own true stories to life.
An affable, dog-loving kind of guy. Harvey never looked away from the row he was plowing, but just reached down to pat Rags on the head.
I'm going to give you $1.5 million certified check. Just don't put it in till you get to Little Rock and start shooting. And we said, sure.
I'd get in her full-length mirror, and I would just look and be as sexy as a fourth-grade girl can be.
I'd written this song that I never intended it to be a song, and I'd made my own record on it, and I never wanted anybody to hear it, and that's what all the great producers heard, and they said, now this is who you are.
So you're saying there was wine in the jugs?
No, I didn't say that, no, sir.
We've had Southern writers, directors, TV personalities, actors, musicians, politicians, and many more Southerners come and tell their stories. We've been on the air now for 7 years, and we are heard on multiple public radio stations around the nation, as well as satellite radio around the world. Thank you for your support of Tales from the South. So how about our stories and storytellers tonight? What'd you think? Thank you to all of our writers, thank you to our live audience, and thank you to UALR Public Radio. You can download and listen to our podcast on our website. More can be found at talesfromthesouth.com. Have a great night, and we'll see you next week at Starving Artist Cafe in the Argenta Arts District of North Little Rock, Arkansas, for another edition of Tales from the South. Good night, everybody.
Tales from the South is presented by the Argenta Arts Foundation in North Little Rock, Arkansas. Discover more at argentaartsdistrict.org. Our official media sponsor is AY Magazine, Arkansas's leading lifestyle magazine at aymag.com. Additional support provided by the Winthrop Rockefeller Institute at livethelegacy.org. Also, the North Little Rock Visitors Bureau and Oxford American Magazine, the Southern Magazine of Good Writing at oxfordamerican.com. Writer accommodations provided by Robin Wood Bed and Breakfast. Studio time by Infrared Studio Productions. Graphics by Robin Steves at Studio B. Our executive producer and host is Paula Morrell. Our production engineer is Jay Jones. Thanks for helping keep the art of Southern style storytelling alive. And we'll see you next week, either on this station or at Starving Artist Cafe, for another edition of Tales from the South.